Yo guys, I hope you're all good and welcome back to another episode of the Drop-In Podcast. Thank you as always for the ongoing support. It's been great to see the feedback on the last few episodes. If you haven't already listened to those guys, please tune into that one after you've listened to this one, of course. On this week's episode, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by a good friend of mine, Chris Kyle. As many of you guys will know, is an insane BMX rider and is also turning his hand to mountain biking now. Can we chat a little bit about that, as well as his insane story leaving home when he was young to live in a skate park? And that's obviously what helped him become the rider that he is today. So thanks as always for tuning in. And without much further ado, please welcome to the podcast, Chris Kyle. Yo, here we are, episode 11. Chris Kyle, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me on.
We've talked about it for quite a while.
I know,
about getting
you
on, so we finally made it happen.
Finally got me in this time, mate. Yeah, last time I was down, I meant to do it, didn't I? But didn't have time.
Nah, it's class. It's pretty random setup. Absolutely lucked out to get another person inside the studio to do it in person. You're obviously working on a Red Bull shoot, which pretty much by coincidence is like 50 meters down the road of where we're going.
Yeah, it's pretty handy, isn't it?
So a massive thanks to Red Bull for sorting out the COVID tests and stuff like that. So you're obviously working on a new project.
Yeah.
What are you sort of able to tell us about it?
Yeah, so this is probably it's another big project of mine, and it's my first ever mountain bike project that Red Bull have ever backed. So yeah, I was fortunate enough to be able to kind of build my dreams in the woods, and things that I've kind of dreamed about for years really, and kind of turn it into reality. And this is my first ever legit mountain bike video really, you know, and fortunate enough that Red Bull backed it the whole way, and they were like, yeah, go mad, pretty much build whatever you want, it's in your head. So I went in there, had a look around, and was like, yeah, you could jump off this roof, you could build a landing down that tree and curve all right up in the trees. But as usual, well, you know yourself, it's all right calling all this stuff out, but then reality is when you actually get in there, you're like, oh mate, what am I in for? Why have I done this to myself again? And obviously I've just kind of got into the mountain bike, and I've not been doing it for as long as I have been riding BMX, you know, so it's all new to me. So this was a massive learning curve, but and it's been one hell of a journey. But yeah, I'm stoked, and today was the last day shooting, so somehow made it out.
It's pretty class. We were just sitting in the house, myself and Danny were just chilling, and you popped your head and you're like, got like 2 hours, we've finished filming, like, do you want to bash this out? So definitely like the least prepared I've been for, but we'll just probably chat shit anyway. But so the project, you basically started the project back in November.
Yeah, back in November, yeah.
Just filmed, it was all going well, and then you had a bit of a...
Yeah,
you end up getting injured.
Yeah,
on like one of the sort of second last days for filming or something.
Yeah, weird one, because I'm usually, touch wood, I'm pretty damn lucky when it comes to crashing and like getting injured. Like I never really, I think that my worst injury was like broken toe out of like my 18 years that I've been riding. So yeah, usually pretty damn lucky, but yeah, towards the end of last year, everyone knows it was such a rubbish year that we all had, and I really wanted to end it on a high and have something that I was stoked on coming out, because the video was meant to drop in December. And yeah, I fell, like I was on like the second last trick, it's so close to the end of finishing it, and crashed, broke my rib and banged my shoulder up. But I didn't realize that at the time, so I was like, nah, I'll just stretch it out. Tried to ride the next day. Obviously, I'm like not pulling properly from that side because I wasn't 100%. Took another crash, could hardly breathe, and then the lads were like, look, if you've broke a rib, we're out here. If you punch your lung or something, it's not really worth it. And I was like, nah, I'll be fine. Give me five minutes. And then they're like, no, let's go to hospital. So I was like, yeah, okay, go there and then come back. And the guy was like, yeah, you broke your rib. You won't be able to ride for a bit. And I was just absolutely winded, because that never happens to me. And it's just like, you forget it's part of it when you get lucky. But yeah, it sucks. But at the same time, I'm thankful it did happen, because it made me more and more hungry for it. And I'm stoked that we came back. We had an extra week, so I built something else that I've always dreamed of doing on the mountain bike. So I managed to do that and get that done, so it's a bonus. So I wouldn't have got that if I didn't break my rib.
Yeah, it's funny that how things work out, where like you're literally, other than having to go through the motions of breaking your rib, you're probably looking back on that and being like, I'm actually glad it happened. Yeah, it sounds insane, because the video is going to be better for it. Yeah. It's going to have like the trick that you were trying before, plus like two extra. So
And I changed up the big line, because before the big line I was so beat after like filming for like a week and a half, and I was like, yeah I'm just gonna hit this big line but kind of chill for it. And then now I went back and actually done some better stuff that I wouldn't have done if I didn't break that rib. So
people are going to listen to this, because this podcast is probably going to come out before the video's out, so it's going to be like the ultimate teaser. But what I will do is, if they're listening to this podcast when it comes out, which is what, the start of April?
Mid-April.
So we'll put the link in the description if you're listening to it past mid-April. So you're obviously into mountain biking now, but you're primarily a BMXer. Like, how would you describe yourself now as a rider? Because you're like the first BMXer we've had on the podcast, but you're also mountain biking now as well. So like, what do you tell a guy in a pub that asks what you do?
I don't know. Not that you can go to the pub. I'd say just bike rider, isn't it? Like, I look at it as always pretty much one thing. Because to me, the mountain biking, it was like a breath of fresh air. Like, instead of riding street in a city on my BMX and getting chased away by security, I could be waiting for traffic before you hit like a line or something. I was like, it's quite stressful. And then with the mountain biking, I feel like you're up in the hills, but it's like street riding, because you're looking at things to pop off of and spin off of. And so for that, it's like street riding, but in the hills, but you're riding with nature. So, and there's no one telling you, get off that roof, get down from there, this and that. So yeah. But for me, it's a breath of fresh air, and I like that side of it. And also, like, you know, well, the bikes are a lot bigger, aren't they? So it's a lot harder. Like a 360 on a BMX is easy, and on a mountain bike, it's 10 times harder. Yeah. So it's like learning everything all over again. And that's why I love it. It's just kind of the same buzz, but yeah, all over again.
Do you feel like riding a mountain bike helps you ride your BMX better or different, or?
Yeah, well, it's weird, because if I ride the mountain bike loads for a couple of days and go back to the BMX, it feels like I'm like, what is this wee toy bike that I'm riding? I'm like, it's so small, but I love it. I think it's a good crossover, and I don't look at it as if, like, if I ride my mountain bike for a week straight, I don't think, oh, I should be riding my BMX because I'm a pro BMX or whatever. Yeah. Don't think like, oh, I should be riding BMX more or less than that. I just think a nice balance of all. And it all crosses over each other. Yeah. So it's a win-win, and fitness side, the whole lot. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Now, that's been class to see, because there's been quite a lot of BMXers been riding mountain bikes recently, but I would say like you're one of the first like sort of top guys that started doing it. Did you get any hate from the BMX community or sponsors or anything like that, or you're following?
Not really, no. I think it's been pretty lucky, but yeah, you get some people that comment on it saying, oh, you should stop the mountain biking. I follow you for BMX, not mountain biking, but whatever, I don't care. It's just all about having fun, and I don't really care what people think. I bloom and love it, and like I follow so many mountain bikers, and like they all ride BMX as well. So
yeah, I think everyone's just generally crossing over more than they used to.
Like, I think back in the day it was almost frowned upon, wasn't it? People would just kind of stick to their own thing, but I love it.
Yeah. So just to kind of wind back the years then, like, where did it all kind of start for you in terms of BMX? I've seen like little bits of documentaries and stuff of you like coming up as a kid and stuff. And obviously we'll get to unit shortly, I'm sure, because that's a big part of like your development. But what's your sort of, what's your first memories of riding bikes just in general?
First memories of riding my bike was, I used to go out to the skate park when I was like 9 years old, and my mum would take me out and I'd watch my brother riding with all his mates. Yeah. Looked as if they're having the best time ever, and I wanted to be part of that. So for my 10th birthday, I begged my mum and dad for a 16-inch BMX. I got it, and didn't look back. I was just hooked on it, and I loved it. But all my friends were always older than me, and then as they get older, they get into cars, drinking, all that stuff, and I was super young still, so I couldn't do that. So I was just left riding in the middle of nowhere. Stranraer.
It's a town in the west coast of Scotland.
Yeah. Southwest. Yeah. But there's not much going on there. Fortunate enough to have that little skate park with metal ramps, but that was it. So I would just be riding by myself. And everyone kind of moved on. And then from there, I think I was 13. I started getting a train up to Unit 23 skate park in Dumbarton, the other side of Glasgow. And it would take me 3.5 hours on the train. And I'd do that when I was 13, and coming from a small town like Stranraer, I'd never really been in the big cities, isn't it?
You just have to get a train from like Stranraer into Glasgow, Stranraer then back out again.
No, it was Stranraer to Ayr, Ayr to Glasgow Central, and then I need to pedal through Glasgow to Queen Street Station and get on the train from there to Dumbarton East. So it take it'd take me 3.5 hours there. And coming from a small town like Stranraer, it was scary going to the big city, especially when I was young. But yeah, and then after a while, each weekend, I'd be back in Stranraer at school and stuff, and I'd hate it. And I had like hardly any friends, just because they weren't in the same things I was into. Yeah. So I'd just ride my bike, and school would be rubbish. I hated it. And then I was never bad in school or anything like that. But I remember I'd like on purpose I'd fall asleep in class or pretend to. And then they'd send me to like time out, but I only lived around the corner from the school. So they'd send me there and I just walk home, get my bike, go ride my bike at the skate park. And my mum would call me because she was a teacher at the high school. And so my dad was a janitor. My brother-in-law was my geography teacher. It was
no escaping. Nah, you can't escape if you've got
one hell of a time. But but yeah, so she'd call me. She'd be like, "Where are you, Chris?" And like, such and such, a guidance teacher said that you get sent here, this and that. What happened? I'd be like, "No, I didn't feel well, so I went home." But I felt better, so I went riding. And then she'd be like, "You can't keep doing that, this and that." And then I was like, "Yeah, I know, yeah." And then and then at the weekend I go to Dumbarton Unit 23. I made so many friends up there, and then it felt like my life was up there. It felt like Stranraer was just like, it was horrible. Every time I was home, I didn't have anyone to hang around with or anything. So it was rubbish, and all my friends were up in Glasgow. So I just started making friends up there and staying with them at the weekend. My mum and dad would be like, "Yeah, it's fine." And then my mum would give me a day off school, like a Monday off school. And then she'd call me. She'd be like, "Right, Chris, you better get home. Where are you?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I missed the train. Oh, I need to stay another day." But I didn't miss the train, obviously. But then I put her through a bit of hell with that side of stuff. And she found it hard because she had to keep making up excuses.
Especially as a teacher as well. Yeah. I imagine it's pretty difficult.
Pretty bad. it wasn't the best. But then I was meant to be doing my exams and stuff like that, and our standard grades and stuff. And I was actually helping build the bowl at Unit 23 skate park. I was in there helping the lad. Well, not that was much help, but I was in there like passing the nails and stuff, helping do that. So I've got no standard grades or anything like that, no qualifications. Thank God the riding worked out for a little bit.
I guess it must have been definitely like, looking back, obviously in hindsight, it's all worked out. But for your mom, especially as a teacher, you could totally imagine, it's not as if you're like into football where there's like an obvious career path, even if it's quite unlikely, that you're going to like necessarily make what you have out of it. Yeah. So did you end up just basically not going home one day?
Yeah, I just ended up staying up there for like a day, turned into 2 days, 2 days turned into a week turned into a month. And then before I know it, that was me that was up there. Yeah. And then, but it was incredible. Like I had the best like upbringing in the world when I think about it. And then Chick let me live in the skate park.
Yeah, so Chick Maley is obviously owner of Unit 23.
Yeah, pretty much my dad. Second dad.
That's class. So you just basically kind of sleep in the park at night and just ride all day basically.
Yeah, so that was gnarly as well. But it was like, when I think back to it, I honestly don't know how I done it because it was so cold in the winter.
Yeah.
But like Chick looked after me. So what happened? I'd go up and stay. I'd made friends up there, so I'd go and stay, just couch surf for a bit. Yeah. And then Chick was like, "Look, if you want, you can just live in the skate park." Yeah. And I was like, "Oh my god, that is every kid's dream, isn't it?" So, yeah, I think I'd just turned like, I think I was like 15, turning 16 or something. Like that. And he was like, "Yeah, if you like," and I was like, "Oh my god, amazing! Yeah, I can ride whatever." But it was quite scary because it was used in the war to build parts of planes, and then it was a distillery, and then it was derelict for years, and it was a skate park. Yeah. And the woman that works in there, the cleaner, Jillian, she said that she thought it was haunted. She was like, and every night I've been there thinking, "Oh my god!" And you'd hear footsteps and stuff, and you'd be like, "What is going on?"
But seagulls.
Yeah, but I think I was just overthinking stuff. But I'd have the best time ever when all my friends were there, and then nighttime would roll around. And it'd be so scary, and I'd be sleeping on a 2-seater couch, and it was so scary, man. And then the next morning, though, the next day would roll around, and it'd be the best time ever again. And then at the weekend, a few of my friends would stay over as well, and it would be so good. We'd ride all night, and it was literally the dream. It was incredible.
Yeah, such an insane setup. Like not only to live at a skate park, but actually like that skate park, which is, well, it's like the biggest indoor, or it was at least the biggest indoor skate park in the UK. Two massive halls. Yeah. It's always changing as well.
Yeah.
Just like the dream setup for getting good on a bike.
Yeah, it's the best place in the world. And if it wasn't for that place, if it wasn't for checking the lads, wouldn't be here talking to you now on this. Yeah. So yeah, all of them. So yeah.
Nah, it's class. Some scene, like, how would you, obviously that's your experience of unit, but like, how would you kind of describe unit, but as well as not just for the physicality of what it is in terms of ramps, but just that whole, the people and the scene for people who haven't heard of unit?
Yeah, it's like we're like lost boys because there was so many that lived there. I think there was like 12 of us at one point. But we were all from different parts of the country, all over the place. And we've all got kind of weird backgrounds of like leaving home mad early and just like daft stuff. But it was weird how that one place in the UK just like took us all in. We just looked like a magnet. We just all went to it. And it was one hell of a time with those lads. I tell you what, I've had some years there. And it's been the best years of my life. I mean, we're all like, we're not even mates. We're just like brothers, you know, and that's legit. We are like brothers.
Nah, it's class to see that, because obviously like, myself and the guys I ride and stuff that lives like nearby, so we just like see little snippets of it, like go ride with you boys a bit, or maybe go party with you guys sometime, or not even plan it, but you'd always like see you guys meet in Glasgow or whatever. Yeah. It's such a class time. Obviously units and stuff still going, but it's not necessarily like necessarily people living there and stuff anymore. But where did, when you're like growing up and living in unit, you're obviously just getting ridiculously good on a bike, where did at that point, were you always like telling your mum, I'm going to be professional, whatever, or did it just kind of happen a bit more naturally than that?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to just be a ramp builder. That was always a dream.
Yeah.
Because I never thought, a kid coming from like where I came from, it was always America where you see all these people there.
Yeah.
Or England, as I got a bit older. But I never really thought about it that much. And I just had such a good time at the unit building ramps and that. I was like, this, I would love to do this the rest of my life. And then I guess because I was there riding all the time, like one thing kind of led to another. And then like, I think Nike hooked me up when I was 14, which
that's some first sponsor to have.
Like, I couldn't believe it.
Straight in at the top.
Could not believe it. That was at the Entney's Backyard Jam in Sheffield. And I was 14 then, went down for that. And then they spotted me there and then they're like, yeah, would you like, we like your style. Would you be up for riding for us? I was like, what, Nike? I was like, oh my God. I was like, yeah. And then that lasted for over 10 years. So
was that just basically like a flow deal? Like,
yeah,
like it's free just stuff like, at first. It's not, you're not like, isn't, you've not gone pro or anything.
No, it was 6.0. It was just free shoes, but the shoes that I'd get an insane amount of shoes. It was ridiculous. But that was just the dream. I couldn't believe it. And then after that, I was sponsored by BSD, which I'm still with now. And from then it kind of started making, like, I remember like when I first started getting like paid off a sponsor or whatever, then it kind of hit, I think I was 16, turning 17. Then it kind of hit, I was like, actually this could be like, it wasn't much either. It was like a couple pound a month pretty much, but it was, it's like a signal yeah, what you could do. So that kind of drove me to ride even harder and just love it. And I was traveling more with everyone and it all just spiraled. It's mad to think like, I honestly can't believe it. And I definitely don't take it for granted. I think it's each time, even now flying somewhere, I'm like, who the hell is paying for this? For us to go out here and ride these bikes, I'm like, this is mad. But yeah, I'm along for the ride.
Yeah, it's well class. Like, it's good to watch. It's good to be involved in a little bit as well. So obviously worked in a few things in the past. I guess one of the standout things in terms of sponsorship is obviously Red Bull, getting a Red Bull deal. Been signed up, how did that all sort of come about, and how did it kind of feel to finally get that sort of validation by getting signed up by those guys?
Bloody mental. Absolutely mental. But yeah, no, that is a massive dream come true, especially to go from a kid like when I was buying the Red Bull cans and petrol stations and that. I'd never think in a million years that I'd be on it. And then I even had my face on it, didn't I, after Kaleidoscope on the can. So I had my own can. So that was pretty mad going to the shops and seeing that. But yeah, I was 19 when I got put on Red Bull, 19th birthday in Madrid. Me and Jason Field, we came third at a contest, Red Bull Metro Pipe.
Oh, the team
thing. Yeah. And then I got like, when we were on the podium, they brought me out a birthday cake and my helmet and that. And it was like the best day of my life. I literally couldn't believe it. And I've been on them a long time now as well, but it's been some journey. Like, the amount of things that I've been able to kind of dream up and try and turn into reality is, it's like, it's unbelievable, you know?
Yeah. Nah, it's cool. What would you... How would, obviously not to take anything away from your other sponsors, because like you said, like they've been massively like integral in everything you've done. I'm sure they support you loads. What's the sort of like, what is the difference between, what puts, sets Red Bull apart in terms of like their support and sponsorship from maybe like a traditional sponsor?
Yeah, I guess what sets them apart would be they can literally just turn anything that you think. And I go to them each year with about blooming 25 absolute ridiculous ideas and knowing like, yeah, not thinking that they could ever be possible. And then, yeah, all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, man, let's just do that. Okay, that's fine.
You've got to be careful what you call
out. Oh, mate, totally, 100%. So, and this, like, this project that I called out, I'm like, oh, God, what have I done? But yeah, I think just with that, they kind of have the links and stuff to make these kind of bigger projects possible. And, yeah, it's so good for the sport.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. You've done some pretty insane projects with them, which I'm sure come with their like pressures. And it's funny, like hearing your sort of background, when I think of some of the stuff that we'll chat about now, where you've done, I don't even know what the budgets are for some of these like movies, but you obviously did Red Bull Kaleidoscope, which was back in like 2015, 2016 or something. How would you describe Kaleidoscope to people listening who haven't seen it?
Yeah, I guess my first ever big Red Bull project was the Kaleidoscope one. And with that came so much pressure. Like I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. I was like,
was it your idea?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you say, like, I want to do this video with like all this like, false perspective? And then did they kind of just take that and just
massive? Yeah, half and half really. Like, they had a good idea and added. And we're like, what can we do to make this like look like this? And then all of a sudden it was insane. It was the biggest project I've ever worked on. And it was crazy. It wasn't just like, you know how we're used to going out filming, we've got like one or two filmers at most. Yeah. This was a proper production, movie quality, mate. Like movie quality, everything. The whole shebang. And it was like, usually I'm shouting, I'm like to Matty, or that I'm like, you good, Matty? You ready for this? I'm coming. And I'll drop in. But on this, it was like, and like action, this and that. And then it was like, and action, Chris. So even if I wasn't ready, as soon as it went on action, Chris, I'd be like, oh God, here I go.
It's just on like their terms rather than
their terms.
That must
be
pretty stressful.
It was stressful, but I really enjoyed it because it was something that I've never been part of like that. And it was another side to the whole thing that I've never seen before. So, but it was a lot of pressure on. And as well, it was like, I remember one time, the only thing I didn't like about it was I was trying to do a double peg to flare and I landed it a few times, but I didn't land it right. And I think I tried it like 159 times or something like that. And it was like getting not that late, but they have a shut off time at like five at night because they're like a production company and that. And I was just like, no, I was like,
you're used to just to like filming going for as long as it takes, like, get a lights out or whatever.
Yeah, I was like, we need to keep going. And they're like, nah, we're off the clock, mate. See you tomorrow. And I was like, oh no, just something I wasn't used to. But thankfully the next day I went in and it worked like third go. So worked out.
That's funny. That's the sort of stuff that definitely wouldn't fly on like a BSD trip video or whatever. But
it was all a massive learning curve. And I remember as soon as I finished it, I was like, I wish I could do it all again tomorrow.
Really?
I really enjoyed it.
That's cool. I remember going to visit the set once. And I was just like,
wild.
I was expecting it to be pretty insane, but it was just like mental. It was literally like being on a Hollywood film set in the middle of Glasgow.
In Glasgow as well.
So obviously that was like a massive success. And then another project that obviously stands out is the Dubai project that you did with Red Bull, Visit Dubai, which again, I'll link in the description. One of the sort of, it's kind of cliche to talk about it, but I'm sure everyone who's seen it, it sort of stands out. It's the most insane thing. We basically jump out a helicopter into what's that building called?
The Burj Al Arab.
Yes, it's like the hotel.
Famous one, isn't
I think
it?
Like, is there not been like three athletes out there? It's like Federer, Tiger Woods, and Chris Kyle.
Yeah, myself.
Boy from Stranraer.
Yeah, I know.
Basically like jumping. What? How did that even? Was that your idea? Was it someone else's idea?
No, that was my ridiculous idea again. That was started off as a joke. So we went out for a recce in Dubai, and it was like, getting to ride like flumes and all this. And it was incredible. And we got all these locations though. We had locations picked out. Like, what do you think you can do here? This and that. And I was like, everything like the flumes, I was like, oh, you could loop the flume. You could do this and that and all that stuff. And then we went up on the helipad and they were like, oh, is there anything that you could do up here? And I was just joking. I could jump out of a helicopter, land, and I could also jump off these over this railing down these things and land on the red carpet. And they're like, oh yeah, okay. And I flew home thinking that would never happen anyway. So I flew home, and then about a week later, I got an email saying, yeah, it's been signed off, we're doing it. And I was like, oh no, but I wasn't filming because it was so hot out there. I wasn't filming until like November. So the end of the year. So I was sweating it the whole year thinking, I've said that I'm jumping out this bloody helicopter. So what, I got myself into it again. So I was stressed the whole year for it, and then got there. And I remember like practicing in the car park, try to jump out of the blooming helicopter. My bike, as soon as I put my bike outside, it would get ripped away from me. It was so hard, like the arm pumping cramp that I had from just trying to hold onto that bike. Yeah. And then you go, it was like jumping out of a tornado, honestly. Like, yeah, the kind of wind wash off, it was like jumping into a tornado.
Yeah. So you basically, what do you call that? It's just like
I just jumped off.
It's like a kind of caveman style.
Yeah, I don't even know what I'd done. It was the easiest way that I could have got out of the thing. Safest.
Yeah. I don't know if you call it safest, but
yeah.
Did you, when you were in the lead up, when you say you're proper stress mate, were you ever tempted to just kind of chap it on the head and say it wasn't happening? Because it did make like the perfect start of the video.
Yeah, that's annoying thing about it. Like when I say something, like, I hate calling someone out and not doing it. And then I was like, that was the last thing of that whole video as well. And it was, so I was stressing the whole time. But I was like, there was no two ways about it. I was trying it. I was going for it. But the jump was scary. But then the scary part was I had to land and go in between these two poles. You can't even really see it on the shot, but it's over the... And I didn't have much time to land and not get squirrely and then go over that stair set. Yeah. But so it was quite stressful. But and the weather as well, the day I was going to do it, it was too windy. So I had to go back and just chill that day, go to bed that night, not sleep. Yes. And then get up the next day and then go for it. And we didn't really have a big window to
do it. And that was literally the last stunt you pulled for the video. What's that sort of emotion going through you, like when you literally like get to the bottom of the second jump?
It was the best feeling in the blooming world, and it's why you do it. But all my mates were there, all the unit boys
were
there.
You see the BTS at the end of the video that
so
people are watching, make sure to watch them.
Rugby tackled off the bike, but it's just, I love it. I absolutely love it, especially after a blooming week of non-stop going hell for leather filming. Your body is absolutely wrecked. And you land it, and that's you. You're done. You know that you're going to be flying home with a big smile on your face, like knowing that you've done it. And I can never wait to watch the finished piece back. So even like this one, I finished it today, and I just want to see it now. You know, I want to see the finished bit.
Yeah, cool. Look forward to seeing it. It's going to be class. You obviously were talking loads about filming and stuff. Another obvious side of BMX is sort of competition side of things. You've done a little bit in the past. Yeah. What is it about filming that makes you kind of gravitate towards that as opposed to the competitive side of things? Because you have mentioned earlier that you did compete a little bit.
Yeah, and I hated it. Everyone hated it. Stress of it, and I just don't enjoy it at all. I feel like it'd almost be a waste, like flying out somewhere. Because what I don't like about it is there's so many people on a course, and it's mad. It's like a mad race to hit a quarter pipe or a jump box, and everyone's crashing at each other. It's just stress that I don't like. And I like seeing everyone at these events, but I don't like riding with everyone because it's a mad frenzy to try and hit stuff. And you try to get as much practice in as possible, but you're crashing at people, so you're more likely to get injured, and it's not fun. Like, I don't want to be trying to like getting in front of someone or in like that.
It's just so different to the vibe that you guys are probably used to, like when you're like on a BSD.
Aye, it's chilling, and it's like you could do the best contest run ever, and people will talk about it for a week, probably tops. But you do a good video part, people are going to talk about it for years. And I'd far rather focus and try something for hundreds of goes and try and film it instead of. That's what I enjoy. I enjoy that a lot more than what... It's way more rewarding for me instead of going to a contest. I get mad nervous anyway. I hate riding in front of people. Even at the skate park, if I go there, I hate riding in front of people.
Well, you did shows with us. You can't be that bad.
That was tough though, mate. That was tough.
You got over it eventually.
Yeah, but I was so nervous. I remember my mouth was dry. Signing autographs. But it was mad. But yeah, for me... No, I was never that good at the contest side. It never appealed to me, and thankfully now I don't need to ride them. Yeah. Thank God.
That's good. It's cool. Like Red Bull supported you.
Yeah.
Well, not just Red Bull. Like Red Bull, BSD, all your sponsors supported you like down that route because obviously they see value in there. So
yeah.
With obviously the Olymp and obviously the Olympics has been delayed and stuff like that. But what was supposed to be 2020 BMX freestyle was obviously introduced into that program. when you first heard about that, like 4 or 5 years ago, was there any temptation to kind of think, because this Olympics just kind of cool, puts it on a different
level. Pretty cool level. To say that you've been,
even to just have gone there. Was there any part of you? Because I think we talked about it at some point around about that time. I remember chatting to you and the guys about it. What was your sort of thinking around it?
There was definitely a bit of me that was like, do I just try and go for like, just to get in it and like, just to say that I've been in it. And I would love to. It'd be such a cool opportunity. And I think it's cool to get BMX out there. But I definitely wanted to. I thought at one point I was pretty set on it. I was like, right, I'm going to do that and just go down that route. But I'm glad that I didn't. I just got caught up in projects. And yeah, I enjoy that. So I'm just going to keep doing what I enjoy. But I think the Olympics is great for BMX. The more people, like, it'll be a mainstream, so people will see it everywhere. It means bigger companies will come in. It means it can just make it all better for us and just make the whole thing bigger.
Yeah, I guess you just have to, with the level of it now as well, it's not like a case of, oh, I'll just like carry on doing projects and I'll also do train to be a competition. You got to go on that circuit. So like, not just the training, you got to do the qualifying. I guess everything else would just have had to have taken like a backseat.
Yeah. And to be honest, I'm not that type of rider. I only have about 5 tricks.
I guess you kind of give it a different, you would probably just have to take a different approach, learn some new tricks or whatever, but then also like try and ride the parks differently to what maybe.
Yeah. And
some of those guys are just absolutely
beasts. It's mad, and it's too hard to keep up. And like, you're either one or the other. I think like some guys can do both, but I can't. I'd rather just focus on my filming and what I'm passionate about and what I love.
I've obviously been, you've been a pretty big, been a big presence on Instagram. It's pretty much like what's kind of given you your career over the last what's your sort of relationship with Instagram in terms of
it's definitely helped me out. I wouldn't have got a lot of things that I have through it I wouldn't have it's definitely helped me out a lot, because I remember back in the day when it kind of first came out and got on it, and I'd just like, I'd use it as a motivational tool though, because I'd ride by myself in the unit. I'd get up mad early and be like riding at 8:30 in the morning and just set my phone up, and I'd try something that I wouldn't usually try. Like I wouldn't try something on a normal session.
Yeah.
So the phone would just like, it kind of make me try something for 100 goes until I got it, and then I can post it on Instagram. It was motivation tool, because I wouldn't go, I wouldn't go in there by myself and try something 100 tries just for the sake of trying it. It's to kind of watch it back and kind of what I get out of it and people's reactions. So yeah, the Instagram thing really helped me, and people seem to be into what I'm putting on there. So
nah, it's class. I guess Instagram's like a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because it's obviously, like you say, I have the same thing where if you're maybe riding by yourself or even if you're not, it does give you that little bit of like impetus to like actually be like, right, you know what? The difference between like trying that sort of scary line or whatever, not, but at the same time, it can, do you ever find almost a little bit stressed out by the fact that you kind of, especially with algorithms work and stuff, you need to just like keep it going? Like, do you ever feel like
I want to
chill for a bit, but you know that you kind of almost have this, well, I don't know how many followers, like 350,000 followers just like waiting
for stuff,
for their daily sort of clips of Chris Kyle on his BMX.
Like. I do think so, but like it, like there, like me and Rory were up there filming with me, and I was filming this morning for my new video, but we'd finished that and I was coming down the hill and there was this rock, and I like filmed something on that just with Rory, just for an Insta clip, and I was like, that's a wee bonus, so I was like, that can be, put that out or whatever. And then I showed it to Matty, my filmer, and he was like, can we film that for real? Can we film? So I was like, oh damn, that's gonna, I'm like, I want to hold it. And then I'm like,
so is it not going to be in the main video?
And to be honest, that's more important, isn't it? And it's coming out. I've put a lot into this video, so I want it to be the best it can. And that's coming out next month anyway, so I can post then. But I usually do try and stock up. If I know I'm going on a video project and I won't be on my phone that much or shooting anything else, I'll usually stock up clips in the skate park or out in trails or whatever, and then at least I've still got stuff to keep posting while I'm busy with my other project.
Do you find it quite do you find balancing the sort of projects, whether not just for like the Red Bull projects, but say you're making like a BSD video or something, as well as trying to maintain an Instagram, like regular content Instagram, do you quite find it quite difficult to basically not like put all your content on Instagram whilst waiting for the videos and stuff?
Yeah, like, sometimes, like especially BSD, like Dave and that are like, why on earth did you film that and put it on Instagram? We should have filmed that for real. And I'm like, but Instagram's so easy, isn't it? You can just film it and then just bosh it up, and then you're constantly progressing, isn't it? Yeah. And it helps with everything. So yeah, and it is tough though, because like even at the minute, I think because I've been at home for a while, I'm just doing a lot more projects. But I've started filming an RBSD video with Alex Donaghy, and he was messaging me last night, and he's like, you want to start filming on Monday? And I'm like, oh mate, I'm absolutely battered after that. I was like, I'm going to need a couple of days off, so maybe aim for Thursday or something. But but it is, it's just like, I'm more hungry now for it than I think I ever was, just because I was injured, and I've never really been injured like that. So it's an eye-opener.
Like, how do you feel like the sort of main difference between doing like a solo project with like Red Bull, like the one you've just done, or the one in Dubai, or Kaleidoscope, compared to like going on like your BSD, your BMX sponsors, and like team trip? How does that sort of dynamic?
It's just
like
two different kettles of fish, isn't it? Yeah. It's just completely different, but I love it. Like, I went on a BSD trip last year with the lads. We all hopped in my van, and we'd done a trip, and it was like challenges and that. It was brilliant. And it makes you forget how much you love it. And it's such a laugh, but it's just more chilled, isn't it? And like, well, I say it's more chilled. It's pretty much the same thing when you're filming. It's putting yourself through a lot of stress in it and fear. But
I guess you can have like a couple of like, either like no clip days, or like, because you know that somebody else will maybe like get some other clips. Yeah. It's not just the new, but it's definitely a different vibe, isn't it?
Yeah, where if I'm on these projects and I don't get anything or I get hurt, I'm just like, I'm in such a kind of downer. I'm like, come on, man. Because I love being productive as I can. But yeah.
We've already talked about you sort of being a BMXer as well as a mountain biker. What is the sort of main like transferable skills or like that you feel that you get when you come onto a mountain bike after being on a BMX? Because you've obviously jumped on a mountain bike and you're going to have this, I guess it's kind of similar to trials. You're going to have this sort of like accelerated.
Yeah, like you boys have.
Sort of like progression curve, if you know what I mean. Because you're kind of like connecting the dots, or there's some skills you already have.
Yeah, figuring out. But I guess just looking at stuff differently. Just looking at stuff and thinking, oh, that looks like a quarter pipe, let's hit off that into there, or jump from here to there. Or just even trees, like riding up trees and that, like transitions and stuff. So I think all that kind of stuff, and knowing that the technique is kind of there for some stuff, definitely helps. Like, yeah, so kind of knowing how to tail up and all that, and 360 and all that stuff kind of helps. It's just a hell of a lot harder. But, it's kind of figuring it out, and that's why I love it.
Is that like, have you had any kind of like, I know I've had it with like going from the e-bike or the mountain bike to trials bike, where you basically like had a few moments where you, whether it's like, I don't know, trying to pull up something and you just literally like go back to trials bike and you end up just like ripping the bars too hard.
A while back, just when I first kind of properly started riding loads of mountain bike, it was just when the BMX and tried to do a manual, like in the unit, just like blasting around it and come out, try to do like a high speed manual along the deck and just be a woof right off the back. But yeah, so yeah. That's about it so far.
Nah, it's pretty funny. Like, what do you think the sort of future holds for you then in terms of riding, career? Like, well, do you have any plans just basically on the sort of immediate horizon? You mentioned something with Alex and stuff, but
yeah, plan is just go absolute hell for leather, make these years count, and absolutely go for it. To be completely honest,
you try to just look past having some celebrated beers tonight because you've just finished filming.
We're gonna have a bit of a night tonight, the lads. Not gonna lie, but yeah, no, like I think for me, I'm just so stoked on riding, and this project, it was my first proper mountain bike video where I've built stuff that I've had in my head, and like stuff has actually worked. So coming away from this, I've learned so much, and I'm already wanting to do the next one. And I've been chatting to lads about the next one already. So hopefully there'll be another one of these. But for me, for the next few years, I just want to have a fine balance of riding BMX and mountain bike, and literally just enjoy myself the way I am now. So keep going, keep cracking on.
That's cool. You mentioned briefly Matty there as well.
Yeah.
And we obviously filmed with a guy called Dave Sarby for BSD stuff, but Matty Lambert, you've been filming him with, in most of all your Red Bull videos.
Yeah.
How is crucial is that to having Matty as that sort of like director?
Yeah.
Because he was filming in Kaleidoscope and stuff, that Red Bull have understood, you guys, that you need to have that sort of like rider and filmer, even when it is like a big sort of like budget project with a production company on board and stuff.
Yeah, you need someone that gets it, and he gets it, and I can work well with him. And like, a few films that Robbie, I'll say, not from that angle, mate, that's crap what you do. And then he'll be the same, nah, can you just make that look stinking? Can you just pull up a bit harder or jump a bit higher? I'm like, nah, like, can't, but you need that kind of banter. And he does a hell of a job. And he, yeah, we work well and we enjoy ourselves when we're out on these things. And yeah, he's up early like me. So you need someone that's productive and keen to get stuff done as much as you can. Yeah. And can bounce off each other and not rub each other up the wrong way, although we do, but just like jokingly, you know, but you need that. So it's brilliant. And yeah, like sometimes he'll give me pointers and I'll give him, even though that I know that, I don't know what I'm doing with the camera, but I'm just like, mate, it looks better from here, like this and that. So yeah, you need someone like that, that just gets it and it's not a hassle to work with. It's just cool. Like same with Dave Sarabi, like he gets it, you know, and it's brilliant, man. So yeah, and that's the people that I've worked with over the last few years. And that's probably who I'm going to continue just to work with because, well, no, probably, it's a definite.
Like, I guess it's just like when you, I guess it's when you're doing something like hard or scary or hard and scary, you just like need to have that. It's like not just like an actor like doing something that could like maybe redo something. It's like you need to know that if you do it, that's going to, it's not happening again. So they need to know that you have to have faith that they're like going to not only press record, but also like actually catch it good. And you're not going to be like feeling down after you've got the clip to either have to go again or worse, almost like, oh, it's not perfect, but we'll just have to like take it.
Yeah, because if he messes it up, then I'll be like, right, let's go again or whatever, and we just keep going. But that's the thing, it's a team effort, and especially with Andrew Lawrence with the drone there as well. It's like, he's unbelievable with that drone, but I know it's a team effort. So the amount of times I'll mess it up and he'll get it right, or the amount of times that he'll mess it up and I'll get it right, it's just like bouncing off each other. But when you both get it right, it's double the buzz. It's double the feeling, like, hell yeah, God, mate. Like, so it's like, and I get that. I know it's not like, mistakes are going to happen and it's part of it. Like, we're working to get the best thing done. So
I think it's bad to let everyone that's pretty much on the shoot, like even up there with like the shoot that you're on just now, it's a reasonably big production, but it's basically like 10 friends basically working together, like from like the builders to the filmers and stuff. Just to go back on one thing I meant to ask at the start was, we're talking about sponsorship and stuff like that, and one of the things I know like I would get quite a lot on Instagram is kids, especially nowadays, like sort of asking like how to get sponsored, like can I get a free bike, or how do you get sponsored by Red Bull? Like, what would be like your sort of advice to those kids getting into riding?
Yeah.
Wanting, like, if they say want a career in riding and stuff.
I don't know, like I probably what everyone else says, like, oh, just enjoy your bike, just go and ride. And as long as you love it, do it. Cause I know for a fact, if I didn't enjoy doing what I'm doing, or if I don't enjoy anything that I don't, if I don't enjoy anything that I do, I'm not going to do it. So you need to really pour your heart and soul into it and be passionate about it. And it doesn't matter if it's BMX or skate or mountain bike or whatever. I reckon as long as you're passionate about it, no matter what it is, you'll succeed no matter what. But that drive needs to be there and you need to make sacrifices along the way. So
yeah, I think it's pretty much like, this is pretty much saying exactly whatever, like what most people are saying, especially within like a sort of creative sport.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe a little bit different if you want to be like a professional, like runner or whatever, where it's like some people are just like so focused and like that personality can almost like get into the top. But when I think it comes to something like this, so like creative,
you need to want
you actually almost like it. You need to want it, but you also need to kind of like be willing to go not be like a professional to do
it.
You
need to love it. You need to love it. If you don't love it, it's not it's no point in doing it.
So we talked about like sort of plans for the next like year. So where do you think you'll be in like, this sounds like, I sound like your guidance teacher back in the day, but like, do you reckon in like 5 or 10 years, you'll still be like riding professionally, or do you think you maybe work in the industry? Or have you even thought about any of that sort of stuff yet?
I'm still going to be hopefully riding at a level I'm at, really. I want to just, because you look at everyone getting older and that, and like, but some of the lads that are out there are definitely getting on a bit, but they're still top of the game. So yeah, I think for me, I'm just going to keep going. And you're only as kind of old as you feel, aren't you? So I just want to keep going with it and keep trying to live this dream, mate. Keep chasing it.
That's class. Do you think you've been pretty, we see you on Instagram, you're like up at the crack of dawn, like running, doing like HIIT workouts. Is that Is that like a sort of conscious thing? Because you're like trying to like keep yourself fit in terms of like longevity, in terms of career, or is it just because you enjoy doing it and you like to sort of stay in shape?
Just because I enjoy doing it. And like, I could be sitting in the house and get a good email off someone like about a project or something like that. That gives me fuel to get out and go for a run, like a lot of things like that. And then I go for a run thinking about stuff and it just kind of all manifests into one. And then that's like, that's how I kind of try and turn everything that I have done into reality, is like put it in my head and think about all these things, but like try to use all that as fuel. And I feel like the running puts me on another level of just stokeness to kind of, and I don't know, I feel like the more you do, and it's like hard work, isn't it, I guess. Yeah. And it is, I love running and absolutely ruining myself where I'm going to be sick and I'm just like pushing. And, but yeah, it's like, I love that kind of, I feel like that hard work pays off, and that is that saying, isn't it? And I feel like it really does. So that's like, even if I do get a good email, that drives me to get out and earn it, you know, yeah. And earn the next one. So,
have you noticed that like the running and stuff has made an effect, like a big,
definitely, yeah,
on your mountain biking and your 100%, BMX?
Yeah. Like, I think for the stuff that I do, if you think about the BMX and that, and it's like your stamina, but when I'm filming, I'm trying something for 200 goes. And I know for a fact I can keep walking up a hill, like up there, keep hiking up the hill and going straight back in again, keep hiking up and not even breathing really, and going straight back in and keep going. And I feel like that's a running. Like when I'm running up a hill, I can control that breathing and I can keep going and keep going and keep going. And so I feel like that's where I've got that from. And then hit sessions. And I haven't really been doing any of them in a while, but yeah, like,
I guess you've been doing enough up that hill. Like,
yeah, but
that's interesting. I never really thought of it in terms of the like running back up as a thing, because like you just aren't able to do it over and over again if you don't have that sort of like baseline fitness off the bike as well.
Yeah, so yeah, I feel you think it helps. It keeps you light as well, and just kind of
Nah, that's class. Yeah, so do you think you can imagine yourself working in the industry though? Like, I think you mentioned that a while back when we were chatting.
Yeah, I'd been keen for being like a team manager or something one day, but yeah, I would, because I love it. I'm passionate about it. So yeah, if I can get away with that at some point, I'd love to. But yeah, but at the minute, just kind of focus on what I'm doing.
It's your birthday's coming, right?
Aye, end of this month, mate, 25th of March.
25th of March? How old is it going to be?
21.
21? Oh, shit.
21, yeah.
That's amazing.
Pretty good. Nah, I've been blooming 29, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, 29. Oof. Can't believe it.
You just bought a big house, and actually, I won't say where it is. You probably want to keep it. Yeah, so, you mentioned you were half flirting at the idea of doing YouTube content when you were in your house.
Yeah,
you back off it? Like?
No, I got a dog as well, so that kind of took a bit of time. No, but yeah, I do want to start a YouTube again. But I was thinking for the first video, I'm going to build like a ramp in the garden and stuff. Yeah. So I was thinking about starting it with something decent instead of just like me like an actual proper one. So still going to come, but I'm going to do that when I get back.
Are you going to go for like full skate park piece, or just a mini ramper?
Two different minis, maybe a spine mini thing, but yeah, like be weird, it'd be cool, but be fun. Yeah,
that'd be class, just right in the garden.
Aye, yeah.
Sweet. Cool, man. Well, I won't hold you for too much longer, because I know you got to get back to film a couple of extra shots before you can crack open a beer. Like I say, I'll link the video.
Yeah.
Well, I'll link all the videos we talked about in the description, as well as the new one when it comes out. Where should folk hit you up if they don't follow you already?
Well, just give me a cheeky follow on the old Instagram.
At Chris Kyle. KRISSKYLE.
Yeah, that's the one, mate.
Here we go. Nice one. Thanks, man.
Yeah, nice one. Well, thanks for having me on, Dunk. It's been a pleasure, mate. And see you in a bit.
Cheers.
Here we go.
So there we have it. That was Chris Kyle. Absolutely stoked to finally have him sitting down with us and hearing that insane story. I've heard little snippets of it before, so it was cool to hear it in its entirety. Definitely was cracking me up. So hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Thank you as always for tuning in. If you do want to see the video version of this podcast, we are streaming every episode in full over on YouTube. Just search the Drop-In Podcast. As always, it would be absolutely awesome if you were to give us some ratings on the App Store, Spotify, or wherever you may be getting your podcast. So please do that, and we will be forever grateful. So thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys next time.